I really look forward to this. You guys cost me a lot of time. They all call me up. You speak, and I go, lots of different things. You're the only group I saw at Old Parker. And I started thinking about some of the things that we've explored. It seems to me, if I recall, first time I came, I think we talked about the battle cry for Israel. Be strong. And it's this amazing word that travels through the Bible. It's the very last thing David says to Solomon. It's almost the last thing Paul says to Timothy. It's a legacy, and it's the fact that we're in a battle. And it's a battle that keeps shifting out from under us. And it carries with it the idea that God is utterly faithful and notoriously unpredictable. Experience that just about the time you get your health sorted out, you learn something new about the biology of your body you never explored, you never heard before. I am slowly getting a degree in biology. I discovered I had an ulnar nerve when I messed it up playing racquetball with a bunch of old way too good for me to play with. And then it turns out when you're old, it takes longer for those things to heal. And then I think the last time I was here, I had planned to speak on something else, and someone stood up and read Philippians chapter 4. And this summer, I had a one in three, I hope, 5 weeks of anxiety attacks. I've never before in my life. The irony is I'm curriculum international depression and anxiety. And it turns out you can study all you want, but until you've had it, you have zero idea what's really going on. And rewrite everything. But there was one little word that just captivated me in Philippians. In Philippians 4, it's a verse, rejoice, always rejoice. And verse 6 is also a famous verse. It says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything, with prayer, and supplication, with thanksgiving. And then the peace that surpasses understanding. I mean, it's the most brilliant thing ever written about mental health. But there's a transition phrase between rejoice and be anxious. All need to become sorts of. It's being for someone. It's using your authority, but having a lot of grace in there. It's being able to hold space for your children and grandchildren, but for some reason, it's taking them forever to realize that you're right. And giving them a chance to catch their breath and see the truth. And so I thought this morning I would continue some of that theme. Weeks ago, I went to an elder's retreat, and a dozen men gathered from both coasts. Yeah, Colorado Springs, and I was introduced to a word I hadn't heard before. So I have been trying it out on everyone since. It's a comfortable word. Controls a doorway. And the question is, are you in or out? If any of you own pets, you know what I'm talking about. The dog scratches at the door, you open the door, and the dog gets in a threshold. I'm going to think about it for a while. You know, you got me up, and now you're just going to think about it. In or out. And liminality, a liminal zone, is one of those places when you're you're in that uncomfortable stage of a rite of passage. You haven't let go of one thing to grab hold of something else. You're still identified over here, and you haven't made the move into this new place. And if you think about it, all of life is liminal because it's constantly changing. I wrote a little book called The Annoying Attributes of God. He's always right. He's invisible. I mean, it's amazing how many annoying things there are about our loving, immutable, glorious God. And if I ever rewrite the book, I'm going to add liminality to it. He seems to think it's a good idea for us to continue to grow and adapt all the way up to the end. And who knows what happens in heaven? I don't think he's going to stop. So I was thinking, where would you find this in the Bible? And my first thoughts went over to Acts chapter 17. Remember the earthquake in Philippi, and then they get run out of town, and they go to Thessalonica, and they get run out of town, and they go to Berea, they get run out of town, and he's down in Athens. And he's watching all these birds at the cross. And he's talking about this in this, and then he says something that is definitive of who we are, because he sets the times and boundaries of every tribe and family. Our boundaries are holds to get us to miss him and go looking for him, though he's never. So this idea of liminality, I was to take this out of a painting. I have one of them you all know. It's called The Return of the Hermitage in St. Petersburg. It's a massive painting. It's over 8 feet high and almost. And early on in the 90s, we could go to the Hermitage for 25 cents. My wife and I sat there and looked at that painting for at least an hour, maybe two. And there were tons of people in there, but every time they walked into that room, it got quiet. That painting was so powerful. It would be like going to the Louvre with Mona Lisa, which is nothing compared to Rembrandt's painting. Him on a liminal journey through his entire life to paint that one. He was trying to become a painter of that. And so he decided to move to Amsterdam, and he wanted to do something different in Amsterdam. And so he did one landscape painting. This, the real painting's about 5 feet high, a little over 4 feet. And so those of you at home, you're going to remember this for look at it. So when I began to talk about the history, well, I got myself. In fact, I brought all of you a copy of it. Not like that. I'm a little cheaper than that. But I need a volunteer. Thank you. And one more volunteer. Make sure everybody gets one. You know the story. It's in Mark chapter, feeding the 5,000, different things. He's moving. And once again, we're on 8 miles wide, 33 miles, the lowest body of fresh water on the planet. And it's also stormy. And so this picture is one of those moments of liminality. It's going to be moment when you nearly some of the most memorable teaching moments are Mike Etheridge and I had rented a boat out at Boulder Reservoir, and what we know about sailing you could put in a thimble, but we're out, the wind is blowing, great time, we're out in the middle of baseline lake, which is just a drop in compared to the Sea of Galilee. And we look around, and there are about a dozen others there. And all their rudder in the air. I know this about sailing. You always want to keep your rudder. And we're screaming along, having still. At which point, we're in trouble. And so we begin to think, how in the world are we going to get back to shore? And it was a liminal moment for us. We still remember it to this day. Mostly what I remember is I know nothing about sailing. It was just dumb luck that we were so up. But the thing about this, there's two things about it. One, it became famous, but no one could see it anymore. Because in 1990, 2 feet, the biggest heist of masterpieces in history. $50 million of the masterpieces. And that painting was out of its frame. The frame is still there in the museum where you can see it. No one has legally set their eyes on that painting in what? 32 years? It's become this legend. You'll read about it in mysteries and TV things, the storm on the Sea of Galilee. But there's a couple of things. You're not going to quite do that. But you can do it for yourself. But what Grant did was, if you count the number of people, you'll find 14 people. And you go, well, wait a second, there are 12 disciples and Jesus. Where's the 14th person? And if you look, sort of in the middle of the picture, you'll see one person staring out. He's breaking the fourth wall. That's Rembrandt. He painted himself into the picture. But what he was trying to say in this painting, I believe, is that it's in the middle of a storm, a liminal movement. Different things you could be doing. And if you look at this, you'll see different groups with different strategies. In the front of the boat, they're trying to get control of the situation. You ever been there? It's like, yeah, we need to, what's going on? You see one guy is throwing up over the, you know, that could be us too. But what I want you to do, just in Paris, just for a couple of minutes, is I want you to assess the strategies of the different people in this level of moment. They're doing. If you need to mark four, I think what you find out is that they're all in the boat and Jesus is asleep in the back and they decide to wake him up. And just evaluate each of the different strategies that you see there. Okay. And you can talk out loud. It's perfectly fine.
Too much of a coincidence.
As you're assessing the different strategies, you can go ahead and make a point, that's fine. As you're assessing the different strategies, the question becomes, which would be my default? And as you look at them in this painting, particularly if you can see the big one in detail, you begin to make assessments about which strategies look foolish or futile or faithful. You it's a painting that I would often trigger, at least in me, my judgment. And I'm like, if you can't figure out anything, just do something. But look at that and figure out how do you think you would be on the hook. So my next line always leads us on to the next conclusion. You're quite right. You stayed on the boat long enough, you discover you try all strategies.
Every one. Too many boat rides.
Now, I put another little piece of paper on the table for you. On one side was that little painting, but turn over to the other side. And what I did was I took the different groups and strategies and I blew them up. We used to do those little plastic models there. The thing is too small. I think it would give you a blow up of what it was. So the question what are the lessons of elders of major space in history are supposed to do? Is anything Russia's going to attack you today? No. I'm pretty sure we will do whatever Putin wants to do, although there is a higher power that may change that. But a lot of things going on in our life, it's hard to remember a time when we were less stable and less able to figure out what's going on. I realized if I wanted to buy a used car, I should have bought it 2 years ago. It's amazing what's going on. I have changed cars for 2 years. If I paid that much money for that car, And so I may be walking soon. But the thing about it, and you can read this for yourself if you like, but the idea that we're always caught off guard. God's to keep us off balance. Because this is where we grow. This is where faith and trust is formed. It's kind of like if you want to be a hero, you need to be at war. No heroes in peace. And so if you look, there's a lot of different responses. And the thing I discovered in my soul was that I had a motive before I tried to handle it. So if you look at Rembrandt, anywhere but here, or is there hope looking beyond the moment to a bigger story, a bigger picture? He's read the end of the story. He knows on the boat with the one that controls. Or the group that's friends. He fall in that category a lot. One of the first things you do art, fix it. It's difficult to do that. Are you frantic or purposeful? And even the little guy that's all crouched in there, I thought, well, it could be frozen, or maybe it's just you. And so there are possibilities. Like you said, if you stay in the gut, you'll want to experience a whole range of things. And maybe compassion for those in a different place in the world. And that will takes you back to the reasonableness in case. Part of what we are supposed to do is what we're supposed to do is provide a place, not a snowflake place, but a place where you could step into something that's going on with your children, with your grandchildren, with your neighbors, to hold space where there's peace in the middle of the storm, where you're not judging them, you're for them. They have an opportunity to look beyond her life and see in the bigger story. The one thing that's true of the perspective is Jesus was and he is successful and our lives. That's really all I got to say. The problem is so much I get that. I get scared, I get mad. But I start one of these other when the best strategy is to remember who's there with me. That's the one thing for the two kids that signed their divorce hearing that said, I don't think the two of you should be married. And they said, thank you very much. We wanted your wisdom on our pre-marriage counseling, and we're not going to take it. And then they said, we need help because our marriage is falling apart. So I said, great. Happy, Lucy and I are happy to help you. And I said, here's my wisdom. Do not get divorced. 5 years from now, you'll be much better off than you will be if you get divorced. And they are very consistent. They decided not to take my wisdom again. I thought, so being totally right at the beginning of this credits me nothing for that. No, it's not so. They're hurting. I don't know what. So they're following the world. The one thing, and Lucy's always smarter about this than I am, is it's like, where's Jesus in this? Why don't we listen to him? I bet he's got a strategy for what we're supposed to do. So let's do one more thing. Go back and look at the picture of it. Because it certainly seems to be very apropos of where we're listening in here right now. And we were this close to the brink of war. It's probably the whole crisis. The last time this confused about what's right and wrong. The last time we were this blip as a country was probably the Civil War, the back of the boat. And you know what? He's no longer sleeping. Why don't you take a couple of minutes in the midst of whatever liminal thing you're involved with? Of course, there's always 20 going on at the same time. And invite Jesus into that moment and ask him what he'd have you do. Father, may the internal atmosphere of our be an inviting one. May we invite you into each of the circumstances and those that we love. Father, when you're invited, you show up. And when you show up, you always do what you do. You calm hearts, you awaken our spirits, you work miracles, big and small, external and internal. I thought what an exciting, yes, very much in need of you. So Father, I pray that their hearts would be wide open to you, that would be the threshold that they set, that they cross. That you have preeminent lives all the time. Mm-hmm. And we may forget as we all will. Would you nudge us and remind us that the answer to everything is always you? Mm-hmm. We welcome you into this moment and all the other moments coming, Father. Mm-hmm. We don't have any other hope. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a good thing. Because Daddy, I get tired of pretending to be the adult in a world where I don't know what to do. Yes. And I thank you. You're the only Father. You're the only one who has the words of eternal life. And as Peter said, where else can we go? I thank you that you made it simple. There's no plan B. We just go with you. So awaken our warrior hearts. Awaken the older parts of us that need to expand that atmosphere to our children's children, friends, and our animals, that they too might miss you and go looking for you though you're not far, because that's the one place and home. Amen. Do that, and I pray in your son's beautiful, glorious name. Amen.